This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Good morning. We are continuing 774's coverage of the breaking news today that police have shot dead fugitive gunman Desi Freeman at a property in Victoria's northeast. It happened just after 8:30 this morning, and we're waiting on more details. We're waiting on a media conference that will be due any moment now with the Chief Commissioner of Victoria Police, Mike Bush. So big news for that whole region. For so many communities, including the police community, of course, 7 months that Desi Freeman, the self-proclaimed sovereign citizen, has been on the run. He's been wanted since August over the fatal shooting of two police officers at Poor Punka. That is Detective Leading Senior Constable Neil Thompson and Senior Constable Vadim Devat Hotart. So we know this is still unfolding this morning. We will get more details as they come to hand. We know that the state coroner is going to attend the scene. There'll be a professional standards command investigation that is standard as well. But we need to know more also how he survived, how the police tracked him down. All of those details still yet to come. And we'll be talking with someone whose job is to be looking at the welfare of police. This has been such a big moment for Victoria Police in so many ways. And they said in a statement this morning that it doesn't bring closure. It is another step. It doesn't bring closure. What does it mean for police? We will be looking at that. Also, we've got free transport for a month in Victoria from tomorrow. Public transport free across the state from the 31st of March to the 30th of April. Will that help you? We've heard already this morning this hard to get onto V-Line. So will that be better or worse if it's free? Tell me what you think. Also, we'll be catching up with that other story of the day, the top news story. We should be so lucky that we have Kylie at the G. She's been locked in for the granny, the AFL Grand Final. Talk about granny, though. The way one talkback caller described her to Rochelle and Bob this morning, Kylie's a granny. Too old, they said. How rude. Would they say that about Jimmy Barnes? He's 12 years older and he's had the gig already. Maybe they would think that that's too old. What do you think? Should the MCG be a place for crowd-pleasing bangers and a lap of victory, as it were, for the icons among us? And I'm looking at you, Kylie. Or should it be for up-and-coming artists? Confide in me. What do you think? Also slipped into that announcement, by the way, I noticed that the AFL said that a daytime grand final has been locked in for this year and next year, but not beyond. Is that a little Easter egg, as it were? Is this their way of softening us up for a nighttime grand final? I'd like to know what you think. Would a nighttime grand final be okay if Kylie were there? Let me know what you think. We're keeping an eye on the line to make sure that we go straight away to the police press conference. As soon as they start talking, we will bring it to you.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
So the breaking news this morning is that Desi Freeman has been discovered after 7 months and at the same time shot dead this morning. Well, the exact sequence of events we don't know yet, and we are keeping our eye on when the police conference will start this morning. But already we've heard from the Victorian Police Association. They put out a statement and I want to read you a little bit of it. Our members said they would find him. They did. Closure isn't the right word. This represents a step forward for our members, for the families of our fallen members, for the community. It doesn't lessen the trauma, give back the futures that were callously stolen, or lessen the collective fear and grief that this tragic event has instilled in police and the wider public. So what will today's news bring for the police community? Dr. Jacqueline Drew is a police scholar with the School of Criminology and Criminal Justice and at Griffith University. Thank you for joining us, Jacqueline.
Thank you.
What will be the impact of today's events? We don't have the details, but the fact that this was the end of a seven-month manhunt.
It'll certainly bring back memories for officers that obviously were involved in some way, but our policing community across Australia, it will bring back memories of when that tragic day that we lost those two officers. And we know that those memories don't fade lightly. And so our officers today will be experiencing many of the emotions that they experienced that very day we lost our two colleagues.
Have you seen situations like this before in your work, Jacqueline?
Absolutely. So in Queensland Police, we lost two of our officers to an ambush a couple of years ago. And when either in that case, the offenders were killed at the scene. However, we then subsequently had a coronial inquest. And we know that our officers, just as will be today in Victoria, is that once we bring this tragedy back to light, we start discussing it again, those emotions are really raw. Even doesn't matter how many years go by, for the officers that we've lost and the officers that knew these colleagues, those emotions really never go away.
Yes, as the statement said, it isn't closure as such. Can you describe what the emotional impact is, not just, as you say, by bringing up old wounds, but how does the community, police community, begin to sort of address this as a wider issue? Because this statement did talk about the collective fear and grief that the tragic event instilled in police and the wider public. There's that separate element, isn't there, of police being targeted as part of this?
Absolutely. And, you know, in Queensland, we had an ambush which killed two of our officers. Victoria experienced a situation, ambushes in the United States of police officers, it is an all-time high. When police officers go to a job, now in the back of their minds, it might seem like a routine job, but with what looks like increasing violence against our police, people that are willing to not respect the authority of police and cause harm to our police, that of course plays on every police officer's mind, even when they turn up to a routine job. Is this something that could be harmful to me? And I think with the statement from the Victoria Police Association and about closure, really what they were trying to bring light to is that we will never forget those officers. When we talk about closure, it means that we put a full stop and we move on. And in our police community, we are very committed to never forgetting the lives that are lost by officers in the line of duty.
We are talking about the breaking news this morning that Desi Freeman has been shot dead by police. It happened just after 8:30 this morning. We are keeping an eye on the press conference from the Chief Commissioner of Victoria Police, and we'll bring you that as soon as we can. I'm speaking with Dr. Jacqueline Drew, who's a police scholar, talking about the impact of the police community as well. You mentioned that other event in Queensland as well where police were targeted. We know that Desi Freeman was a self-described sovereign citizen. Do you believe that the anti-authoritarian strain for... I'm getting a thumbs up. I think we actually... I'll interrupt you. We'll go straight to Mike Bush, the Chief Commissioner of Victoria Police.
Good morning, all. Thank you for joining us this morning. As you know, I'll make a brief statement about Operation Summit, and then I'll be open for questions. I confirm that this morning Victoria Police, as the result of an operation in the northeast of Victoria, fatally shot a man as a result of the operation into the shooting of two police officers. Whilst it's being reported that person is Desmond Freeman, we have to run through a very formal identification process. So Victoria Police at this stage will not confirm the identity of that person until that process has been undertaken. The operation concluded this morning following a operation that has been ongoing since the 26th of August last year. The operation was conducted by our professionals, members of our Special Operations Group, and Task Force Summit investigators. Whilst there will be a professional standards command and a coroner's hearing into this matter, everything I know at this point tells me that this shooting was justified. As I said, the operation was conducted by professionals from Victoria Police. The very first people to be made aware of the outcome of this operation were the families of the officers tragically killed on the 26th of August, and all of the members that were involved on that day. What I can say, should it be confirmed that the deceased is Freeman, this brings closure to what was a tragic and terrible event. I would also like to acknowledge at this point the investigation team for their absolute professionalism, perseverance, persistence and diligence in bringing this to a conclusion. We are privileged to have these investigators as part of Victoria Police, and they were ably assisted by the entire organisation. I would also like to acknowledge our partners. Every jurisdiction across Australia and New Zealand assisted in this operation. And as I stand here, I have the lead investigators for this matter, and I would just like to acknowledge and thank them for their leadership, again, in bringing this to a conclusion.
We're listening to the Chief Commissioner of Police, Mike Bush.
I would also like to acknowledge the community of Port Punca and the surrounding area for their patience and their perseverance also. This has had impact right across that part of Victoria. People have felt unsafe. We've done everything we can to assure them. But for them, this should bring this to a conclusion. Just in closing, I would like to say it's early days in terms of this phase of the investigation. There's lots to be done. We will keep the public via the media updated about how this matter unfolds and is concluded. And I want to thank you for your support and attention during this tough time, this over 6 months. And again, acknowledge the investigation team for their persistence and perseverance. Thank you. I'll open up for questions.
Commissioner, can I ask, the most recent update on police was that the strong belief was that Desi Freeman was dead. Can I respectfully ask, is that was that a genuine belief, or were there tactics involved there? Can you explain that?
Absolutely. That's a very good question because, you know, we have to follow every avenue of inquiry. And there was a lot to suggest that Freeman had taken his own life. But I can tell you, standing here, that our investigators, that's why they're professionals, keep their mind open to every possible outcome and follow every possible lead.
What was the lead? Well, can you give us an idea of what's led to this morning?
The perseverance and the persistence of this investigation team exploring every other avenue that was open to them is what's led to this. In terms of anything else, I'm not at liberty to share any confidential information.
Was there a conversation with him? Was anything said? Was there a shootout?
What I can say is that there was an appeal to encourage the person to come out. We're examining the sequence of events and we'll be able to report on that. But it did result from a standoff, the deployment of tactics. He then exited the building. There was an opportunity for him to surrender peacefully, which he did not.
Did he fire a weapon?
We're working through the sequence of that. We strongly believe, yet to be confirmed as well, that he was armed.
How long did you know he was at that location, and how quickly did you turn around that operation?
I won't go into the specifics of that, only to say that it's part of that ongoing investigation by a very large and committed team of investigators.
The team on site, how many were involved in that operation this morning? Was it one team or was it just...
That was a very large team, a very wide team, as I said, led by our special operations group with the support of many others and obviously the investigators from Task Force Summit.
You mentioned a building. We have reason to believe it was actually a container. Can you give any further information about that?
It's a very similar construction to a container, but it wasn't a container. I would describe it as a cross between a container and a very long caravan.
There was also suggestions that he came out wrapped in a blanket and armed with a weapon. Can you confirm that?
That's quite possible. That will form part of the investigation. A lot of the information we have is yet to be confirmed, but that is my understanding at this stage.
Exactly what location was he found in, and do you know how long he'd actually been in that spot for?
That will also form part of our ongoing investigation.
Was it in Walwa?
Pardon?
Was it in Walwa?
I'm not going to confirm that at this stage, but we will share those details. We have a crime scene. Many investigators, including the coroner, are heading there to conduct the ongoing investigation that results from this.
We've got reason to believe this was at least around 100 kilometres away from this original shooting at Paul Punker. Do we have any information as to what his movements might have been to get that far and to then hold himself up in this particular building?
That too will form part of the investigation. We're very keen to learn who, if any, but I'm sure some, actually assisted him in getting away from Paul Punker to where he was located. But that's a very important part of what comes next to determine that. And if anyone was complicit, they will be held to account.
Has anyone made a claim to that $1 million, Commissioner?
Anything in relation to any rewards or anything else about the investigation will be kept confidential.
Are police expecting other people to be charged?
As I just mentioned, we will conduct an investigation to see if others have been complicit in aiding him, not just in getting out of the area, but supporting him whilst he's been on the run.
You mentioned that you spoke to, the first people to know were Vadim and Neil's families. What do their families have to say? How are they feeling?
So that's such an important focus for us. I mentioned at the outset that I believe this has brought closure to them. Had the other outcome been suspected, where he may have taken his own life, that would have been difficult to bring closure. So this has brought closure. I'm speaking with some of those straight after this.
We understand that Vadim's family might be in Australia. Is that the case?
Yes, you would have seen them last week at the commemoration for passing of Angela Rose Taylor. They're still here and I'll be meeting them shortly.
Is anyone else in custody, Commissioner?
Not at this point.
We're hearing negotiations span several days. How long had officers been there trying to negotiate with them?
That's part of the investigation I won't go into at the moment. Only to say it's been ongoing by this team since the 26th of August. It's been relentless.
Have police changed their approach to dealing with sovereign citizens since August last year? And if so, can you provide details?
So we liaise with anyone that we believe will be able to help us in this investigation.
Have you spoken to his family today? Have you spoken to Desi Freeman's wife or any other family members today?
Our members have, yes.
And what was the reception to this news?
That's for them to talk about.
I mean, generally speaking, have you changed the way in general Victoria Police deal with sovereign citizen cases?
I'm not sure about the point of your question. We deal with the community the same as we do. We apply a very general approach to how we police the community.
Well, you said that you had reason to believe that there were others that have obviously assisted him to move that far, and charges were just recently dropped against a 56-year-old man, a 42-year-old woman and another person. Would any of those charges be relayed or any further information in relation to those people that you had previously charged?
Well, that investigation's ongoing. We're very open to whatever may have occurred. But this fine team of investigators will explore who and how he was aided to be where he was located.
You said at the outset that he was very well adept in bushcraft and bushman skills. Do you believe that part of the time he could have been hiding out in the bush rather than any particular building or location?
Look, it's possible, but to your question, we don't know at what point he left the Paul Punker area and transferred to where he was found. We do not know that at the moment.
Commissioner, you said it's unclear whether he discharged a weapon. Can I ask what it was that made police fire?
That will form part of the investigation. You've already suggested something. We're exploring that, absolutely. It'd be very unprofessional of me to talk to it at this point until we can confirm categorically what the sequence of events were.
They obviously believe they were under threat, though.
They're a team of professionals. I said at the outset that with what I know at the moment, I'm confident that the actions they took were justified.
Is there any suggestion that the weapon that this man, potentially Desi Freeman, had in his possession was one of the weapons that was taken of the officers during the Paul Punker shoot?
That is a possibility that we're exploring, yes.
Do you have any suspects for people who may have aided him?
If we do, we're not about to share it here.
This has been one of Australia's biggest manhunts. I mean, how much relief does it give you coming into the job as Commissioner and obviously your team of investigators here?
Yes, it's not just the victims' families and everyone involved in the community that this brings closure for. It does bring closure for every member of the Victoria Police, not just those that have been directly involved.
Could you give an indication just on that in terms of the huge breadth of police resourcing that has been required for this, the cost that might have been required for actually trying to find Desi Freeman?
Probably the most considerable investment in police resources we have ever seen, and it's not just Victoria Police. You know, we had officers fly over from New Zealand. We had them from every state and territory here. It's been, what I would know, and of course I've only been here 9 months, but one of the most significant resourced or largely resourced police operations in history.
Could you put a ballpark figure on it?
I can, but I won't.
Are you able to see how many police were involved in the search in the final months and if they'd gone to the property where he was found at all beforehand?
It was considerable. I do have numbers, but I'm not about to share them at the moment.
Commissioner, did you receive any sighting of Desi Freeman up until the last week?
We had over 2,000 leads. Some of them were a number of sightings, none that were confirmed. In fact, they were eliminated. But we had a lot of information that came to us, and I do thank the public for providing that information to us. To your question, nothing that we verified as Freeman.
So within the last week, was this the first time you had proof of life?
I'm not going into any of those details at the moment.
The timeline moving forward, when do you hope to have a confirmed ID?
Should be within 24 to 48 hours. I'm very keen to share that with you when we get it. Going back to your point, there's no value in sharing that at the moment, but as we can confirm things, we will share it.
Commissioner, is there a level of frustration and, I guess, respectfully, disappointment that he's been able to draw this out for 6 months, given the resources, the attention? Where do you put that, that this man, this single man, has been able to drag this out for this long?
Yeah, it's taken up huge resource, and one of the pleasing things is that we'll be now able to dedicate that resource to other matters, other serious crime investigations. So, it has been a real area of focus, but it's been the number one focus for Victoria Police since the 26th of August. Everyone has been absolutely committed to bringing this to some conclusion.
What about the owners and the residents in this particular land? Were they aware of what was going on? Do you know whether or not they are being looked at as assisting Desi Freeman, or were they...
Everyone in that environment will be spoken to in relation to that very point to understand whether or not they actually assisted.
Can you give an idea?
Can I go to the gentleman there?
Commissioner, could you explain the property and its connection to the fugitive?
It's a rural property. No doubt at some point we'll be able to describe it and provide photographs. But it's a very remote community.
Was anyone living on the property aside from this?
To my knowledge, no one else was in the immediate vicinity. But there may have been people in the wider vicinity at the time.
When you say vicinity, do you mean property boundary?
Yes.
So no one else in that property boundary?
Not that I'm aware of, yes.
Were they surprised by what had occurred?
We haven't spoken to other people as far as I know. I can only say again that that will form part of our ongoing investigation.
Can you share how long the standoff was?
Yes. The standoff commenced early this morning when we made an appeal for the person inside that premises to come out.
Approximately the shooting happened at 8:30, that's what the lines that we've been given. What time did that standoff start?
Probably about 5:30 a.m.
Did the deceased die immediately upon being shot?
I'm not going to go into that. That's a matter for the coroner.
You were referring to thanking members of the Pulpunkka community for their patience and perseverance. However, there have been some in the community that have been upset, including some people who have, or one person who's launched a lawsuit against police for being held at gunpoint. What is your response to that?
Well, that they'll be very relieved that this is over, and you know, any concerns that they had about the way the investigation was conducted, we'll treat that very professionally and respectfully.
So that was the Chief Commissioner of Victoria Police, Mike Bush, talking about the shooting, fatal shooting of Desi Freeman, the self-proclaimed sovereign citizen. A lot of details there and a lot of details still missing and still to be confirmed. As you would have heard, we heard Mike Bush say that the standoff happened from 5:30 a.m. this morning. He wouldn't confirm the place, but there's reporting that it happened around Walwa, which is east of Wodonga. That's 150 k's or so away from Pulpunkka. So they're still looking for anyone who may have helped Desi Freeman. That's still an ongoing investigation. The standoff, according to Mike Bush, was such that he was given an opportunity to peacefully surrender and did not do so. There is still so many questions about what exactly happened afterwards, whether he was armed. Mike Bush's words were that the police strongly believed, but it's yet to be confirmed, that he was armed and he was in something resembling like a long caravan or container, but a building up in Walwa. It is 26 minutes to 12. We will carry on looking at this story and bring you any leads as well. Also, just want to bring you this account from Neil Sutherland, who called into Mornings with Raf Epstein to talk about what he heard at about 8:30 this morning.
Neil Sutherland's a farmer at Thalagalong. Morning, Neil.
How are you, Raf?
I'm okay. I understand you heard the shots this morning, is that correct?
I heard one, yes.
Tell me a bit about when and if you had any idea what you were hearing.
Well, I picked it as a shot, but it's probably a kilometre down the road. I didn't really know what was happening.
Did you do anything after? Like, did you call anyone or you just assumed it was just something regular?
Definitely not regular because there was helicopters, or one helicopter circling the area, and I heard a loud speaker and a siren, but I couldn't hear what they were saying on the loudspeaker because of the helicopter.
Oh, okay, so you could hear both a shot, loudspeaker, and the chopper. Just tell me a bit about, were you worried when you were listening to all that?
Oh, absolutely. I didn't know what was going on, because it was still dark.
So that's farmer Neil Sutherland, who's in Thalagalong, which is about 30 minutes from Walwa. where the reporting is also centering in terms of where this all happened. The police are not confirming that at the moment. Let me bring back in Jacqueline Drew, who's an associate professor in criminology at Griffiths University, who's very kindly been listening and standing by. Jacqueline, I was just asking you before we broke to that press conference about sovereign citizens, and you heard there that the Chief Commissioner wouldn't confirm whether or not there was any particularly different approach now that we have seen this rise, I guess, at least in prominence, of sovereign citizens and their attitudes towards police, obviously sometimes deadly. What's your opinion on what's happening in Victoria and elsewhere in terms of that?
Well, certainly in the coronial inquest that will subsequently come, that will be something that's examined, just as it was in Queensland with the Wiambilla inquest. We are certainly hearing more talk about sovereign citizens. One thing that seems to be able to be confirmed is the fact that there does seem to be more resistance to police. There seems to be less compliance that we've seen in previous times, and that has led to an escalation of violence.
And we heard there as well from the Chief Commissioner in terms of the impact on the police community. We've talked about that before as well. How far have we come in supporting police in traumatic events?
I think, you know, we only started talking about these issues a number of years ago. So, you know, in a short period of time, we have certainly put this on the agenda very clearly and up front that our officers face both trauma as well as organisational stress. And it's really important to address that, to encourage our officers to seek out for support. We still have some way to go. Many officers are still resistant to reach out to their agencies, to put their hand up. They fear that they will be ostracised or it will have a negative impact on their career. And, you know, days gone by, that certainly has been the case. So I think we need to mature in our views of the real impact that policing has, and particularly when we see rising violence against police. The reaction of our police officers, they're normal people doing extraordinary things, and they really do need our support.
Dr. Jacqueline Drew, I really appreciate you staying on the line and joining the conversation this morning.
Thanks so much. And just to those investigators, as the Chief Commissioner said, investigators have been working on this case for 7 months and they have been relentless in not forgetting that their colleagues' lives have been taken, and they have brought this to a conclusion. So we thank them very much.
Indeed. Thank you. That's Dr. Jacqueline Drew, Associate Professor in Criminology at Griffiths University. It's coming up to 20 minutes to 12. As I said, we will keep across any breaking news, more developments out of this story today. But coming up next, we have this new transport, free public transport month ahead of us starting tomorrow. What does that mean for V-Line, though? Do you use V-Line? Is it already crowded? What's it going to be when those tickets become free?
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
A month of free public transport. That's got to be good news, hasn't it? Daniel Bowen from the Public Transport Users Association joins us now. Hi, Daniel.
Morning, Mary.
What's your reaction to that announcement?
Oh, look, clearly good news for people who already use public transport or can easily switch their trips to using public transport. They're definitely going to be, enjoying the free rides. Less of a benefit, obviously, to people who live in more remote parts of Victoria or even in suburban areas in Melbourne or in regional towns where public transport might be quite patchy and they may not be able to easily switch. But look, hopefully it does get more people on board.
Is it going to help you? Daniel Bowen is from the Public Transport Users Association. Daniel, we do want to talk about V-Line in particular because of a comment, from Nicola, who called into the breakfast show this morning. She had this to say.
I'm currently at Broadmeadow Station about to catch the V-Line up to Albury for my job. I catch it a couple of times a week, and there's a bunch of regulars who do the same thing, whether it's to care for ageing parents, go and work at URL Council, anything else like that. I had to buy a ticket on Friday, and it's standing room only for the way up today. I was able to get a seat for the way back tonight, but I can't get a ticket for Thursday, I can't get into the office. And it's like, well, if you're going to do free public transport, awesome, but you kind of need to do something around the V-Line system, because I can guarantee the V-Line conductors are going to be filthy with this decision, because it's going to be insane.
It's going to be insane. If you are looking forward to getting on V-Line, or do you agree with Nicola that you just won't be able to? Daniel, what do you believe is the situation right now with V-Line, and how that will then be affected by this month of free transport?
Yeah, I mean, V-Line patronage has shot through the roof in the last couple of years since they introduced the fare cut, which on one level is good to get more people on board. But some lines, including the Albury line, have not coped well, and they're really struggling for capacity. It does mean a lot of crowded trains, people unable to travel when they want because too many others have filled up those services. And yeah, you can just see that during April, when the fares are completely free, that's likely to get a lot worse on some of those V-Line services.
Scott, you're calling from Wodonga. What would you like to say?
Yeah, look, I was actually on the train from Wodonga to Melbourne and vice versa on Friday and Saturday. The trip back from Melbourne to Wodonga was just horrendous. Unreserved tickets, there were just people standing everywhere. There were toddlers crawling on the floor. There were people like sitting in the baggage area and on the floor. It was just terrible. And that's even before the free travel. So, it's only going to get worse, unfortunately.
Do you have to use V-Line for work, Scott?
I don't use it for work, but I was actually... I've got a relative that was down at St Vincent's Hospital. I had to go down there at fairly short notice. So both trips were unreserved. I actually tried to book probably 3 or 4 days before we went to go down, and all the reserve tickets are taken, obviously, because people go down there for the footy, and because it's far cheaper, I should say, to... use the train now that it is to hop in a car and drive down because of the petrol price.
Yeah, and yet people are looking for it. And I believe that I read that you won't be able to book tickets. So what sort of situation do you think is going to greet you at the station, Scott?
It's just, it then becomes like a first in, best dress type of thing. I've myself actually got a disability as well, so it means that I can't stand for like that sort of period of time. But, of course... a lot of people's manners tend to go out the window as well too, and I saw children sitting in those orange priority seating obviously should be used for people that have got disabilities or elderly people or people that are a bit more deserving of those type of seats. But so it's just politeness, unfortunately, from that point of view is just.
Yeah.
On right out the window.
Hopefully with a free transport month, we can have train etiquette month. Scott, thank you so much. And Rod, you're in Shepparton. What are your concerns about it?
I travel to Melbourne regularly for Medicaid, for the doctors, and especially the evening trains that come back to Shepparton, they seem to have 6 sprinter trains that are overpacked. And when they get to Donnybrook, 75% of the passengers get off, and I just... seem to be a bit stupid to be running so many trains just to Shepparton, which majority of them are getting off at Donnybrook, which they should be running from the metro trains. So,
would you like to see more trains running, Rod?
I'd like to see them not stop at Donnybrook, because there seems to be a push and push to get on at Southern Cross, because as I said, there's a high volume of people getting off at Donnybrook. Even though the metros aren't running there, they really need to think about what they're doing there. So, and this is going to make more difficult. As I said, I come down every week for doctor's appointments,
and it's going to make it difficult for you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Rod, thank you so much for that insight. And Tamsin, you're in Geelong. What have been your experiences?
Yeah, so I regularly catch the V-Line twice a week for university. So I catch it from Warm Ponds, and by North Geelong most mornings it's already full and there's people standing. And once we get through to about Wyndham Vale and Tarni, it's just chaos. And just to think what it's going to be when it's free, it's going to be a nightmare.
What's going to be your strategy, Tamsin?
Probably try to catch an earlier train.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you, Tamsin. You paint a picture there. In fact, everyone, thank you, Scott and Rod as well, for painting a pretty galling picture. Go back to Daniel Bowen now from Public Transport Users Association. Obviously, you wouldn't be surprised with what you heard there, Daniel. Are you calling for more services? And I don't believe there have been any more announced to go along with this free month of public transport, have there?
Not so far. And look, the government is going to need to act on this, monitor and deploy what they, extra capacity where they can. What they should be doing at the very least is making sure that more trains run as the full length six carriage sets, not the shorter two or three carriage trains. They should be looking at if they have any spare trains in the fleet, can they deploy them out to run extra services? That helps obviously cut waiting times, but more importantly, boost capacity on some of these lines. And I guess longer term, a couple of your callers have alluded to, there are parts of outer suburban Melbourne which are served by V-Line, which means the people who are travelling from further out are getting squeezed in with the suburban passengers. So government should be investing in extending the metro service out to places like Donnybrook in the north, out to the west, Caroline Springs and Melton, and as well as, you know, areas like Wyndham Vale. That would ensure that V-Line trains are available for regional passengers and the space is more appropriately used for those passengers. So there's a mix of things they should be doing during April to help relieve things, but longer term they should be planning and investing as well.
It's okay for 1 month, but what happens beyond that as well? Daniel Bowen, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Mary.
Daniel Bowen is Public Transport Users Association. This from you, same problem on Ballarat Line, says Anne. It's used as a suburban service by so many, standing room only. Joe says free transport will make V-Line less safe between regional cities and Melbourne. And this, people are just never happy. The government could pay people to catch a train and people would complain. Trains in India have people hanging out windows and on the roof. So much privilege, says another texter. We're so lucky in Victoria. I think this conversation is not going to end very soon. Thank you for everyone who's been texting and everyone who called in as well. But it is 11 minutes to 12. And we need to talk about what is going to happen in September, not just that big day for some players, a big day for Kylie lovers.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is the Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Our Melbourne icon is going to join the iconic AFL Grand Final. This has been the announcement. Will they bring all of those bangers? That's what Ross reckons. Maybe that's his vote for what Kylie should be playing. I'm now joined by Ryan Egan from Double J and Fiona Duncan, who's CEO of Music Victoria, to talk about this big announcement. Hello to you both.
G'day, Mary.
Hi, Mary.
I'll go to you first, Ryan. What do you think?
I'm really excited. I think it's amazing to have an Australian artist doing the pre-game. And I couldn't think of anyone better than Kylie Minogue. She's got hits across five decades. Everyone knows the songs. And, I've just been waiting for an artist like this to get me really excited for the pre-game for a while.
She's a marketer's dream, isn't she, in terms of what it means for the AFL branding, if you want to go down that track of the AFL. As you say, everyone loves her.
Everyone loves her. People know the songs. You know, I think, again, when you've got an artist out there singing songs that everyone can sing along to, and we were bopping in our seats during those yes. tunes. We know them deep down, and it'll just be a parade of amazing hits. And, yeah, she's our Kylie, and she's back, and she'll be at the MCG.
She's our Kylie. 1300 222 774 if you want to confide in me about what you feel about this. Look, we say everyone loves her, but before I go to you, Fiona, have a listen to someone who called in to breakfast. This is Kate.
We really, really, really must look at somebody younger and give them a chance.
Oh,
you know, Jimmy Barnes has been flogged to death. They've had their time. And, yeah, they, you know, it's just time to back away from all these oldies cranking it out on the stage for a few bucks and give the younger ones, someone 50 and 30 and 40, a chance.
That's Rochelle Hunt being, I think, justifiably horrified at Kate's call. Fiona, is Kylie going to the granny, a bit of a granny move as far as you're concerned?
I know that it's so ageist, isn't it?
It is. No.
And that's it. I mean, look, it's not about nostalgia. Kylie is such an icon, but it's about cultural recognition, and heritage artists bring connection and scale, but the opportunity is making sure it sits alongside some more current artists. So we're also investing in the future. You know, it's the whole story. And we've just had Kylie announced. There's often other artists. So, you know, we need to see who's going to come and have a mix of a broader mix. But Kylie leading the charge, having an Australian cultural icon, Australian stories and Australian voice at the grand final is amazing.
Yeah, very I'd exciting. Like to point out to Kate that Jimmy Barnes, who's done it, is 12 years older than Kylie.
Mike Gazzaley is 20 years older and he keeps turning up each year.
Yes, I wouldn't want to see an
Mike
age.
Mike Brady, I should say.
Mike Brady. Gazzaley. Mike Gazzaley, he's basically known
put it
as
together
Mike Gazzaley.
In my head, the two, yeah.
Absolutely. Fiona, you believe that Kylie is not just a legacy artist and an icon who has done so well, but she's also the example of someone who has hit mega stardom. What's the situation now? Can other Australian artists achieve that same thing? Between here and when Kylie was starting out, is it still as possible?
Yeah, absolutely. We're seeing incredible success with Australian artists. And I'll have to say, actually, really particularly Victorian artists, not at that megastardom, but there's not many at that level of megastardom that Kylie's had. You know, we're seeing huge stadium artists come through, and stadiums internationally like Dom Dolla, Tame Impala, Tones and I, King Gizzard and Lizard Wizard, you know, Amel is really kicking it. So they're definitely coming through, but we're very mindful of, we've got huge stadium successes happening, but we've really got to look at our grassroots, because the big artists, they come from the small places, those grassroots areas, and we really need to strengthen that grassroots to make sure the pipeline of artists and everyone that goes with them, their teams and all the workers, that they're developing and going up the line.
And, of course, because Kylie's a double or triple threat, really, she started off as an actor, as we all know in the soap opera world. Are there the same platforms, is there the same sort of ecosystem that helped push Kylie to the top still existing for those emerging artists that you've mentioned?
It's really tough. Discoverability is really tough, and that's why the AFL Grand Final has been a real flashpoint, because it's the biggest stage that we have in our country, and to have non-Australian artists being featured there all the time has been a very big pain point for the industry. So we're all very excited we have an Australian, but it is with global streaming platforms dominating, Australian artists are competing in a very crowded market. So moments like this cut through, and you know, they create that shared national cultural moment that algorithms can't replicate. Mm. And it's more important than ever that we have opportunities. But that, you know, there's no live performance opportunities on TV anymore. It's very limited of how artists can get to broad audiences.
Mm. The AFL Grand Final audience is certainly large and broad. Can't believe the text line is still divided. Kylie again says this person, Kate, is so correct. And this one, Kylie is a great choice. This one, my sisters who are football fans and go to the games want to see the match, their teams, they don't give a damn about Kylie. Ryan Egan, it's a tough audience. I mean, in terms of as a spectacle, there was always the thought that Kylie, and I believe there was some reporting that Kylie wanted to wait for a night grand final.
Yep.
That's apparently not going to happen for a couple
no.
of days. I mean, is it still a real challenge for even the Kylies amongst us, let alone the Meatloafs, to really make, sorry about bringing back that scar, to really bring it in a daytime grand final?
I think we've seen some pretty great entertainment. I mean, going back to what Fiona said about Australian artists as well, there was a couple of years there where you had local Australian artists during, with COVID, young artists up on stage, really performing at their absolute best and entertaining people in the afternoon. It's totally fine. Kylie's been selling out massive arenas around the world. She broke records in the UK with her recent tour as well. So she's match fit, to use the terminology.
Oh, yeah.
And she'll bring the best of Kylie Minogue to the pregame. I have no doubt she's a total pro. And, I think it'll set up the game really well. Yeah, I'm really excited.
Michael from Bendigo's join in. another miming has been in the meatloaf class. This leave Kylie in the nursing home, replace her with Amel and the sniffers. Wow, I really did not think that this would be controversial.
There's been some really interesting grassroots work done by people trying to get more Australian artists in the grand final pregame, putting up artists like Amel and the Sniffers, King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, trying to get a bit of that kind of high energy Australian rock and roll back. And I think whether you love the music of Kylie and you've got, you know, thoughts on pop music versus rock and roll, I think once she's out there and she's singing those songs and you see that 100,000 people lighting up for the songs they know and love, and hearing like Padam Padam, it's just going to be really electrifying. And let's not get too let's not try to split it too much. I think it's going to be a good thing. It's a good thing.
Ryan Egan and Fiona Duncan, thank you for leaning into what apparently is a great debate about Kylie. Need a tax on the mega artists, says this text. Do they go straight into the emerging local scene? There's so much going talent in Melbs. You can catch this again on the Conversation Hour podcast on ABC Listen app and email me, conversationhour@abc.net.au. Let's go out with a little bit of Kylie to send you into your day. Have a wonderful day. Join me tomorrow.